is my another? We reflect on this today as our nation celebrates Independence Day, July 4th. This national holiday commemorates when the Declaration of Independence was adopted in 1776 by the Second Continental Congress, calling for the American colony's political independence from Great Britain. Today, this holiday feels closer to my own experience than it has in many other parts of my life. This is for three reasons. First, our family recently moved back here to the Valley from Princeton, New Jersey, where Revolutionary War history in that time period is prevalent. I often pass the statue of John Witherspoon, former president of Princeton University, while walking through the campus. John Witherspoon was a New Jersey delegate to this Second Continental Congress. He signed the Declaration of Independence. He was also a Presbyterian minister, the only active clergyman or college president to sign the Declaration. The second reason I feel closer to this holiday than I used to is that I now own a piece of this history. 2 years ago, my husband Benjamin and I became the stewards of the historic Lincoln Homestead not far from here in Linville, and the Lincoln Family Cemetery is on our property there. There is a decorated grave marker for Jacob Lincoln, who was a lieutenant in the Revolutionary War. When Captain Jacob, as he is known, returned from fighting in the Revolution, he buried his brass button uniform somewhere in a field near our property. He did this because he had been exposed to smallpox in the military camps, but I wonder at what all his uniform burial might symbolize, what memories or feelings he may have wished to bury with that uniform. The third reason I feel closer to this July 4th holiday is because I had the delightful privilege of seeing the musical Hamilton on stage a few years ago. This masterpiece by Lin-Manuel Miranda traces the life of Alexander Hamilton, a founding father of the United States. Miranda's line rings in my ears when I think of this Independence Day. In the musical, Hamilton asks, "If we win our independence, is that a guarantee of freedom for our descendants, or will the blood we shed begin an endless cycle of vengeance and death with no defendants?" I offer these remarks about Independence Day as a preamble to today's theme of one anothering. The first time this idea of one anotherness appears in the chronological text of our scripture, and where it's part of a command, not just a description of people or events. The first time is in the Gospel of John. In chapter 13, Jesus offers the first one anothering command after washing his disciples' feet and acknowledging that Judas will betray him. Jesus says, "I give you a new commandment, that you love one another. Just as I have loved you, you also should love one another. By this, everyone will know that you are my disciples, if you have love for one another." Jesus repeats this again in that conversation as his crucifixion draws nearer. "This is my commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you." The Greek word for one another, allelon, is translated into English as one another and appears about 100 times throughout the New Testament. Grammatically, it's a reciprocal plural pronoun. It suggests the qualities of mutuality and moves toward friendship. Jesus calls his disciples friends in the same place where he gives them the new commandment to love one another. He shows them the greatness of mutuality when he washes their feet. Later in Scripture, in Galatians chapter 5, this is in verse 14, Paul echoes that new commandment from Jesus to love one another. Paul explains, the whole law is summed up in a single commandment, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. Bridget Call, a New Testament scholar, interprets Paul here as undermining the logic of empire that seeks to construct an artificial otherness for the sake of power alone, that prompts me to see my fellow human as a competitor, as inferior, as an enemy. In contrast, Paul is promoting Jesus' way of being with one another in mutuality and reaching out even to enemies in the spirit of friendship. In this new messianic order, with this new commandment, Jesus moves his followers from Roman empirical conceptions of one against another into the compassionate mutuality of one anotherness. When I read Paul's statement here in Galatians saying that the whole law is summarized in Jesus' commandment to love your neighbor as yourself, I'm reminded of when Jesus was asked, "What is the greatest commandment in the law?" I find it interesting that Paul skips over what Jesus named first, love the Lord your God with all your being, and instead he goes straight to the second commandment, love your neighbor as yourself. You might remember the follow-up question that the lawyer asks Jesus, who is my neighbor? When we wonder about this command to love one another, we might ask, who is my another? Jesus answered the lawyer's question with the parable of the Good Samaritan, casting a compassionate and generous other, racial and ethnically, as the neighbor who cares for the Jewish man attacked and left for dead on the roadside. As to our question, who is my another, I'd like to survey a couple of these New Testament one another passages and then finally turn to Romans 12 that was read. Throughout the New Testament epistles, this word, allelon, one another, appears in instructions to communities of Jesus' followers to describe how they should behave towards one another. Here are some examples. From our passage, honor one another and accept one another. Bear one another's burdens. Be kind toward one another. Forgive one another. Submit to one another. Bear with one another. Encourage one another. Comfort one another. Confess to one another. Pray for one another. Be hospitable toward one another. And so many times, love one another. These one anothering exhortations are concrete practices of love, as Heidi shared in the children's message. The New Testament scholar Elizabeth Schuschler Fiorenza notes that early Christians' self-understanding wasn't focused on self, it was focused on relationships. The experience of God's presence among one another and through one another. God is present within these love acts of one anothering. This loving of one another in the way Jesus showed his disciples. These concrete practices of love declare that we are interconnected, that we belong to one another. On this day, today, when our nation celebrates its independence, I invite us to consider not how we are independent from others, but how we are interdependent with others. Let's keep pondering this question, who is my another? So to whom does this kind of interdependence and belonging extend? Our passage from Romans chapter 12 can be divided into two sections around verse 13 as a pivot point. The first half of this passage is instructions for Christian community, and the second half is instructions for interacting in community beyond the faith community. Paul assumes that believers are part of both worlds. It's not quite as obvious in the New International Version, but in the which verse 13 says, "Share with the Lord's people who are in need. Practice hospitality." In the New Revised Standard Version, it's a little bit clearer. "Contribute to the needs of the saints. Extend hospitality to strangers." This shift from saints to strangers marks this movement, and I read this passage as claiming both as our another's. In Paul's instructions, first to the Christian community, to the saints, so-called saints, he calls followers of Christ to act with humility and to consider their another's. He says, "Think of yourselves with sober judgment, not more highly than you ought." He gives a metaphor of the body to challenge hierarchy. He wants God desires all members to have the same mutual care for one another, to act with humility toward one another. There's an emphasis on diversity here as well. Spiritual gifts are received by God's grace. Everyone, every another, has a spiritual gift. And this diversity is essential to the healthy faith community. There's diversity of social position alluded to, associate with those of low position. Later on in Romans, in chapters 11 and 15, Jews and Gentiles are mentioned representing ethnic diversity. And in chapter 14, there is diversity of religious practices like eating restrictions and observing holy days. For Paul, diversity doesn't seem to divide. It enhances the community. There can be unity without uniformity. There can be, as we say here at Parkview, a community of communities. Paul recognizes that our well-being is tied to those beyond our immediate faith community as well. Not only do we belong to one another within the church, but also we belong to those beyond it. This passage also looks outward. Bless the persecutor, feed the enemy who is hungry, weep and rejoice with your pagan neighbors, live peaceably with all. And realistically, he adds, as far as it depends on you, there is responsibility that we have. Do not take vengeance, seek reconciliation. Paul appeals to us to live in this same one anothering spirit toward both saints and strangers. And there are three direct parallels in the verses that help us to recognize this. In verse 3, there is, "Don't think of yourself more highly than you ought." And then in verse 16, "Don't claim to be wiser than you are." In verse 9, "Hate what is evil, cling to what is good." And then in verse 21, "Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good." And finally, in verse 12, "Rejoice in hope, be patient in suffering." And in verse 15, "Rejoice with those who rejoice, mourn with those who mourn." This spring at Easter Mennonite Seminary, I co-led a book study on Willie James Jennings' book, After Whiteness, An Education in Belonging. In this book, Jennings invites us to ponder who we belong to. And as an African-American theologian, Jennings doesn't use this term belonging lightly. Belonging is not about possession or ownership, as in the institution of slavery in this nation. But belonging is about having mutual regard for someone else's well-being, for their dignity, for their flourishing. And then Jennings adds a deeper question for us. What people have I been formed not to see? In other words, what another's are we not aware of or do we intentionally look away from? Personally, I've been working spiritually to practice greater awareness of my another's who I cannot or do not see. Most recently, I've been doing this across time as I work with my hands in rooms in the Lincoln Homestead where enslaved persons were once forced to live and labor. And yesterday, as I rehearsed my sermon and installed tile on a shower wall, I was spreading mortar on the back of every tile that said, "Made in Mexico." And I meditated as I worked, reflecting on these persons across geography to whom I'm tangibly connected by shared places and objects. I invited God's Spirit to increase my awareness of these neighbors, of these another's, so that I might live in a way that contributes to their well-being, so that I might better love these another's. In November 1775, in the early months of the Revolutionary War, a Mennonite leader in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, named Benjamin Hershey, wrote a pacifist declaration to the Pennsylvania Assembly on behalf of Mennonites and German Baptists in the area. It's really different than the Declaration of Independence that was written the following year. Benjamin Hershey declares, quote, "We find no freedom in giving or doing or assisting in anything by which men's lives are destroyed or hurt." Hershey stands in an Anabaptist tradition of nonviolence that's based on the theological conviction that every person bears the image of God, and that our freedom is all bound up with one another's. The body in which the image of God dwells should be honored and should not be harmed. So in answer to Alexander Hamilton's question that I quoted from the musical, harming one another in order to become independent does not result in freedom. It does begin an endless cycle of vengeance and death. And this passage in Romans 12 speaks specifically against that. We belong to one another as members of the human family who are created by God to bear God's image, and our flourishing is all bound up with one another's. We've seen that this past year, as we recognize just how interconnected we are across the world as a deadly virus has rampaged on our human networks. Our lives and our well-being critically depend on one another. Today, on this Independence Day, I invite us into an act of empire resistance by declaring our interdependence with one another across the world. It is in this spirit that Jesus offered his disciples the communion table to which we are invited today. In this spirit, you will be invited to eat and drink and to follow Jesus' new commandment to love all your one another's.